welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to this segment of the Hagman and Hagman Report. I've been medicated now. Apparently somebody grabbed me. Two people grabbed me. They injected me with something. I feel better now. Folks, welcome to this segment of the Hagman and Hagman Report. We've got a wonderful, absolutely fantastic couple of segments planned for you, the rest of the show planned for you. And we've got a very good friend of mine and a very good... if you have never heard the name Vincent Finelli, I ask you to do one thing. In your browser, type in usaprepares.com. That's usaprepares.com. He's got a radio show that I was honored to be on. It was Tuesday. And his radio show runs from 9 to 11 Central Time, 10 to noon, the real time, which is Eastern Time. And I kid, of course, real time. But before we get to Mr. Finelli, I just want to mention the portions of the night's broadcast, I think, after the first hour, I'm not sure, but I think are still brought to you by WholeTonesLive.com. I'm kidding. WholeTonesLive.com. Folks, if you've never heard of WholeTonesLive.com, you've got to look them up. Maybe I shouldn't do this commercial, given the fact that I do say that they have music using the frequencies of King David to calm even the most wild beast. However, and I'm being serious, WholeTonesLive.com is Michael Terrell owns WholeTones Live, and he's the artist and he's the man behind it. Uses the frequencies of King David when in creating music that can either be used for relaxation, for prayer, for healing, for any number of things, for motivation, for clarity of thought, which many people have recommended that for me. But the music, when people understand that music is biblical, well, then you understand the reason why heavy metal rock is so destructive. The reason why frequencies are used as weapons in wartime and to clear crowds. But on the good side, WholeTonesLive.com offers you an array of musical selections. Even download some for free. If you're stressed, if you're overwhelmed, if you're not motivated, visit WholeTonesLive.com. Download your free samples. And seriously, you know, that's a good thing. Joe, I should mention this. I did not play today WholeTones Live. Maybe that's where my circuits were crossed, because usually I have it playing in the background, but I was busy today with a bunch of book work and a bunch of things.
Think of this. If music wasn't... did not influence or have effects on people, why did they, going into battle, did you have, you know, drummers and,
right.
You know, why heavy metal music, you mentioned, I've heard and seen videos where the army, you know, just playing the worst kind of stuff you could want to listen to.
That's right, as a weapon, right?
Yeah.
But Michael Terrell's going to be on with us next week, and I just can't wait. WholeTonesLive.com. Folks, go to WholeTonesLive.com. That's W-H-O-L-E, TonesLive.com. Support our broadcast. Support this show. Download a free sample at WholeTonesLive.com. That's WholeTonesLive.com. Check it out, man. You're not going to be sorry. All right, with us right now, a man who I've got the utmost of respect for. And let me just tell you a little bit about Mr. Vince Minnelli. Met him through a mutual friend, actually, a freeze-dry guy, a great man, some years ago. And Vince Minnelli, is a cattle farmer. He's a broadcaster. He's the man behind the website usaprepares.com. He's a full-time farmer, okay? He has got a master's degree in finance and economics, but you know something? He has not worked. He has not had a job, to be more accurate, since the 1980s. And there's a reason for that. He's here to share his wealth of knowledge with us. And when you hear what he's got to say, I guarantee you, you're going to be just clamoring to have him come back. But I really want you to bookmark usaprepares.com, friend him on Facebook, support him on Facebook, and even send him an email or a little spot on Facebook and say, you know what, and after you hear what he's got to say, guarantee you're going to be singing some praises. Vince Finelli, welcome to the Hagman and Hagman Report.
Doug and Joe, thank you so much for inviting me to be with you this evening. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for not running away when you after the first hour. I really appreciate that.
You're absolutely right. When you were talking about what happens when you fly, it's an outrage. It's an outrage, and you're correct. We need to say no more often.
We do, don't we? And the last time we said no, Vince, a number of years ago, when InfoWars had an initiative around Thanksgiving time that we took part of, and we also promoted. It was opt-out. And, you know, there were people causing scenes or saying we're not going to do this and really gumming up the works. And the TSA backed down, and, of course, there were no terror incidents that took place. So
they shut down their whole security system for that weekend.
Now, Vince, before you came on, you were saying, you know, we could really, this is a manner of fighting for our rights, isn't it? I mean, doing stuff like this, right?
I do it all the time. You know, my children, when they were younger, used to be embarrassed at first. Then they started thinking this is the coolest thing, because they could watch their dad, and then the manager would show up, and then the next manager, and you know, if I were at a store and I just challenged, you know, their system, challenged their policy, people would start, you know, standing around watching, because it was a lot of fun. Just saying no. For example, my credit card was shut down many times by a bank called UMB Financial. I've been with this particular company for years, and they shut my card down when I was traveling to Virginia. And then they shut my card down so that I couldn't pay a $12 meal tab at our meetup a couple Mondays ago, you know, in front of our listening audience. You know, my credit card was declined. So, you know, I was quite annoyed. And so I called the bank, and they, you know, they say things like, hi, this is Michelle. May I have your name, please? And I'd say, okay, my name is Vincent. And I'd say, okay, I need your last name. Okay, Michelle. Are you going to ask me for identification information? Yes. Okay, Michelle, I'm going to need your last name. Well, I am not allowed to give you my last name. Okay. Well, then I can't talk with you, Michelle, because I'm certainly not going to give financial information to someone I don't know, and certainly not to someone who won't even give me their full name. So then, you know, what we do is we ask for the next level of supervisor, and that makes Michelle look inferior in the eyes of her boss. And then when that supervisor says, you know, I'm only allowed to give you my operator code, then we ask for that person's supervisor, and we go up the ladder. And here's what happened. Ultimately, I said, okay, I will give you that information. My name is Vincent, and my operator code is 1234. I need to have your last name. And I'd say, well, I'm only authorized to give you my operator code as my last name. I'm not allowed to give you my last name. And then, you know, we hit an impasse. Now, so far, we've taken up the time of the first agent, the second agent, and the third. Okay? And then we ask for the manager, who's the highest ranking manager. And ultimately, I got to someone who would give me a first name and last name at UMB Financial. And I said, look, you don't understand. When you don't tell us who you are and you ask us for financial information, we don't feel comfortable and we don't want to do business with you. Do you know that the next, that was on a Friday, the next day, Monday, I called up to discuss the matter with them further. And do you know that every time I asked for a person's last name, they gave it to me? I said, wow, that's amazing. So that meeting worked, huh? So you guys had a meeting? And so you can influence corporate policy, you know, just by standing your ground. And, you know, yelling and screaming doesn't work. I just use a calm, easy, even tone. However, I'm an immovable object. And I just don't let go. So that's a strategy that works. And it works if you're in a cashier's line, you know, if you're at the Chinese factory outlet, you know, Walmart, and they say things like, I need to see your ID. You know, you swipe your card. They've just rung up all the items on the conveyor belt. Everything's bagged. You swipe your card, and they say ID. Wow. So you need to have an ID to buy food now? No. We just want to make sure it's you. Really? You don't think it's me? No, I think it's you, but, you know, we just want to see. so you don't think it's me. No, we think it's you. So we don't have a problem, right? Well, actually, we need to see your ID. So now what happens when you do that is the people behind you are getting annoyed. The cashier is getting frustrated, and the supervisor of the cashier is looking over, saying, what's the holdup here? You know, people, the line's getting longer, people are frustrated. This guy's holding up commerce. What's going on? So then we just keep gumming up the works, and we say, I tell you what, I can't do it. I can't show you an ID to buy food. Why don't you just reverse the transaction? Because you don't think it's me. So they have a choice. They can undo everything and put all that stuff back, or they can let the transaction go. And almost every time they say, you know what? You look like a nice guy. We're going to let this go this time. Well, I've been doing it so much that they don't ask for ID anymore. The other thing you can do is you can say, when they ask for ID, you can say, oh, hold on, I'll be right back. And then run out the door. It's in the car. And then you come back. You remember Columbo? Remember that guy?
Oh, absolutely. My favorite. Well, that's actually me. Oh,
that's my character. That's the character I play. So I will come back scratching my head, confused. You know, I thought it was in the car. It's not in the car. Now, I've just messed up everybody behind me, right? Because now what are they going to do? All this stuff, the transaction is in process. It's not complete. And they have to do something with my stuff. And I'm gone for a while. And you know what? They always complete the transaction. They just don't want you to think that you have any
choice.
Leverage. And we do
leverage.
Have leverage.
Yeah.
Because we're the customers. So I suggest to all of those paying attention today that we take the attitude that we can say no. And when I hear things like, you know, it's our policy. Okay, well, I understand that. Well, here's my policy. I don't do that. I'll tell you a funny story about Lowe's. I hate Lowe's. Are we allowed to say things like...
You can say, after you can say anything you want, my friend. Well,
okay. Yeah, I know.
You know, FCC compliance.
I used to shop at Lowe's, the home improvement store. And I went there one day to buy, week after week after week, we were building this house, and I had about 200 plumbing fittings. They were all plastic PVC and CPVC, and it took a couple hours to find every little fitting that I needed. And the cashier rang them up one after the next, and it took a while. And she wanted to see my ID. And I said, wow, you need an ID to buy plumbing stuff now? Wow, I didn't know that. And so I said, tell you what. She told me she couldn't proceed with the transaction without an ID. And I said, well, let's get the manager. And we got the manager over there, and I said, look, I can't do it. I can't give you an ID. Do you think there's something wrong? Did it ring up fraud? Did it ring up over limit? Did it ring up delinquent? Is there any problem with my card? No. We just need to see your ID. And eventually, I said, I'll tell you what. Took a long time to find all this stuff. It's probably going to take about that long to put it all back. What would you like to do? I can't give you my ID. And the manager said, you know what? This time, you know, we'll let it go. We'll let you have it. We'll let you buy it. And if enough of us do that, they'll stop asking for ID. And guess what? Lowe's doesn't ask for ID anymore. But I had to do one more with them. I bought some paint from them. I bought 2 5-gallon buckets of paint for the house. And I had them mix it. The guy did a terrible job. And I said, look, I don't think this matches. He said, you're right, it doesn't match. So what we did was we said, look, we'll take the 2 gallons plus the 2 5-gallons, that's 12 gallons, and we'd like to try a brush. I hate to have you waste all this paint just because it doesn't match. And it wasn't our fault, it was theirs. And so we took the gallon, the 12 gallons home, and we never tried it, but we thought, you know what, it's not even close. So we went back another day, and we found a different team there in the paint department. We asked them to mix paint, and let's try 1 gallon. And they said they were really good at it. So these three girls worked on it for about an hour. And we came back after our meeting to the store, and it was perfect. So I went to the cash register. Instead of $22 or $20 a gallon, it was $35. And $35 a gallon seems like a lot for to me for paint. But it was so good that in terms of matching that we, yeah, let's do it. So I swipe my card, and everything's good, and the cashier says, ID. And I said, wow. Now, here's the problem with this transaction. Nobody wants that paint but me. Nobody, right? It's custom matched to our trim, our gutters and leaders, downspouts on our farmhouse. Nobody wants it but us. And I said, I can't do it. Do you know the manager at that time said, you know what? We can't sell it to you. If you don't give us your ID, we can't sell it to you. I said, are you kidding? Really? He said, really? I said, well, you know what? At home, I have another 2 gallons plus two fives. That's 12 gallons. This is 13. You're going to get it all back. And everything else I can find that I bought from Lowe's that I don't need anymore. I'm going to bring it all back. He said, go ahead. Can you imagine that? Well, I think something happened at that store. They had a regime change, and now they don't ask for ID anymore. Now, I don't think it's just because of me, but I think it's because enough of us said no. And that's the point.
And there it is. See, folks, there it is. Everyone is looking for the huge solution out of Washington or wherever. But, you know, you've got that power. You, listening to this broadcast, you listening to our terrific guest, Vincent Finelli, USAPrepares.com, you've got that power to change policy, to change practice, and make a difference. You can gum up the works, slow down this rapid onset toward wherever we're headed, the centralization of power. You've got that power to do it. And Mr. Finelli's explaining to you exactly how. And it's humorous, too. I can just... So that manager was going to eat that paint, basically. The store was.
Here's what they do. Wow. If you ever go to their the paint department and you see all these weird colors, what they do is they will add some really strange colors to whatever they've mixed so that you won't go back and buy the paint that you didn't at a markdown price. So, for example, it was kind of a tan color that we had mixed, but they probably changed it to a bright orange, and then they discount it. And the idea is they make it so that I won't go back and try to buy it at a discount. That's their strategy. But they're willing to eat the paint, and I'm not willing to give them my ID. Now, if they said to me, if they had a sign in the paint department that said, you will have to produce a photo ID or a birth certificate or a social security card or a passport to buy paint, I wouldn't go there anyway. Okay? But when they surprise me at the last minute with ID and demand it, I won't do it. I absolutely refuse to do it. And, you know, they keep telling me the same thing. All the stores say the same thing. It's for your protection. I go, really? So preventing me from buying paint is for my protection? How is that for my protection? They go, well, what if somebody found your card? And I go, well, I don't care. They go, you don't care? And I go, no. Why would I care? It has zero fraud liability. So I have no exposure for fraud. Now, I don't throw my cards around. I don't leave them in the parking lot. I don't leave them in the shopping cart. I'm careful with my cards. I've never had to call and say, you know, I lost my cards. I've never had that happen to me. So because I'm careful, I don't expect to have problems. But the last thing I expect is to be treated as if I am committing fraud. I'm not willing to be accused of that. And if the store wants my business, they have to treat me as a honest customer. Otherwise, I'm not interested in doing business with them. I don't go to Lowe's anymore, by the way.
This segment brought to you by Home Depot. No, I'm just kidding. but no, you know, I understand that. And now, I suppose, Vince, an argument can be made. Well, what about, let's say you're, what about a small business owner that's concerned about fraud, for example? You know, maybe you stole a credit card. But I guess that's a presumption of guilt, though, that you referenced there, right?
Sure.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Yeah,
all right.
I was at a Walmart, and I walked in, and I said, the lady looked at me because I looked confused and looked like I needed help. And I said, Josh, just kind of looking for the fertilizer. And she said, oh, we moved that. That's over outside or in that other area. And I said, oh, okay. I just go get it and bring it here? She said, no, no, no. Tell you what, I'll get it for you. How much do you want? And I said, I'd like 10 bags. It was $7.70 a bag at the time. So she went and got it, and I did the other shopping. And this was in the lawn and garden area of Walmart. And the cashier is about 20 feet from the door at the most. So I thanked her. I gave her my credit card, swiped it. Everything was good. No ID was required. And I said, you know what? I think what I should do is bring my truck over here instead of pushing this thing across the parking lot. Let me bring my truck right outside the door here. And is that okay? Sure. And I just moved the gondola over to the door to leave it there. And a woman ran up to me and said, I need to see your receipt. Now, it wasn't an ID she wanted. She wanted to see my receipt. And I said, no. And she said, I need to see your receipt. I said, absolutely not. This is my purchase. I walked in the door. I was on the camera from the minute I drove into the parking lot. The minute I walked in, I was still on camera. You have video of me at the cash register. You have video of me walking 20 feet to this door. And here I am. I'm not gonna show you my receipt. But if you want, I'll wait while you call the cops. And so she left. And then I went to get my truck, pulled it up to the door, and another woman ran up to me. And she said, I need to see your receipt. And I said, no, I'm not going to show you my receipt. I'm not going to show you what's in my pockets. I'm not going to show you what's in my truck. No. And she left. And while I was loading from the gondola into the truck, another woman, a third woman, ran up to me, huffing and puffing, out of breath, and she said, I need to see your receipt. I said, no. And she said, do you realize that someone just ran out this door with a TV? And I said, oh, was that me? And she said, no.
Okay.
I said, no. I said, so what's the problem? She said, I need to see your receipt. I said, no, but you can call the cops and I'll wait. And she said, and she left. The bottom line is you can say no. So I say no lots of times. And it works. It absolutely works. So, but when I go to Sam's Club, and I was there today, they wanted to see my receipt, and I will show them. And the difference is, I'm a member of this club, and to be a member of this club, you have to agree to certain policies. And I've agreed to that. But I don't have an agreement with Walmart. I don't have an agreement with Lowe's. That's the difference.
Interesting difference. Yeah.
Hmm. And I'm not a criminal.
Yeah. But the larger point, I think, that you're making, and I really believe this to be true, if more people took a stand and said no, especially to issues that are so blatantly obvious, or well, it doesn't even have to be obvious, but the more people who say no to certain things that are really infringing upon our rights, and when I say rights, maybe that's not the right word, but folks, you know what I mean. We can make a difference. We can make a difference. We can gum up the works enough by those actions to change policy.
And the thing that really bothers the other team is when we hold up commerce, when we delay so that cash register can't ring as fast or enough transactions, or the, you know, if we hold up transactions, that really bothers them, and that really gets their attention, because they are interested in the bottom line. And I once had a problem with an item I bought at Sears, and it was a Craftsman item, and it had a 1-year warranty. It was a timing light for setting the ignition timing on an old automobile. I used it one time, and just after the warranty expired, I took it out of the box again, went to use it, and it didn't work. So this thing didn't have fingerprints on it. It was in perfect condition. Brought it back to Sears, and they said, it's out of warranty. I had the receipt and everything. The original box, was in perfect condition. Everything was in perfect condition, as new. Only used it once. And the sales clerk said to me, well, it's out of warranty. I said, yeah, I know. And he said, I'll tell you what, I'll give you 10% off the next one. And I said, why would I want to buy another one? This one didn't work very long. It only worked once. And so I asked for the manager, and the store manager came over. And I explained to him that I used to work for Sears, and that when I worked for Sears, Roebuck & Company, it was satisfaction guaranteed or your money back. He said, we're a different company. We're not the same company. We don't work for the customers. We work for the shareholders. We work for the shareholders. They don't work for the customers. We're just like there just in case they need a little revenue. Can you imagine that? So ultimately, I said to the manager, the store manager, tell you what, you're going to make me do this. And he looked at me. I said, look, satisfaction guaranteed your money back. I want my money back. And you know what? He said, how about if we give you a replacement? I said, okay. So they gave me a replacement. Bottom line is sometimes you have to do that. Now, Walmart used to say satisfaction always, right? Or no, always. Satisfaction always, and it was just always. What does that mean? Well, it means sometimes. It doesn't mean always. So you have to stand your ground, you know, be polite, ask for the store manager, and when you start burning up his time, generally they yield and they give in. And especially when people start watching and gather around and they're looking at, boy, this is a bad thing because now we've got people watching a disgruntled customer. And if you don't lose your temper, you usually win. So that's how I handled that.
Interesting. You know, and again, I mean, the larger takeaway from this, to me, the larger takeaway is we can make a difference, and we're not talking about being unreasonable here. I don't see any situation where, you know, you're referencing where there's unreasonableness. It's actually sensibilities, you know, to me. So, we can make a difference, and we can actually. It's good stuff. I mean, when I
talk to a bank, and it's like a credit card bank where they have this army of young people manning and womening the phones, and they demand things from me that I don't think are reasonable. I just very politely tell them what I expect. And you know, you can call, like, let's say you have a landline. And if you think that you're paying too much, you can call that telephone company, and this could be a satellite TV company or a cable company, and you can say, you know what, I've been a customer of yours for a while, and I'm thinking of disconnecting because it's getting too expensive, and I have to watch my finances. Is there anything you can do to reduce the bill? Do you know that they'll drop that bill right then and there by $10, right then and there? For a year,
but
generally,
but
a year,
you have to ask.
All I have to do is ask. So yeah. For that 5-minute phone call, you can save $60 to $120. You make another one, you know, to another company, it's another $60 to $120. Because it's hard to get customers. It costs the credit card companies about $45 to find a new customer. So if they lose you, they got to spend another $45 to replace you. So they really don't want to lose you. So we do have leverage.
And you know, a lot of this is done, and to me, this is the way I look at it. A lot of what we see taking place in the marketplace, in the marketplace, is done to condition us. I don't want to be conditioned. I mean, obviously, no one wants to be conditioned. No one, the ramifications of certain policies are much bigger than, I mean, we have to think bigger in my view. We have to understand what is, you know, we're being groomed, conditioned, we're being, in some cases, treated like cattle, well, at the airports. You know, we're ostensibly for reasons of security, we're losing liberty. And so what you're describing to me and what I'm hearing you say is, look, we can change. And again, we can change if we just do certain things. It might be inconvenient at the time, but just think if everyone exercised certain practices like you're talking about. Indeed.
Yeah. I was at a convention, and someone called the cops on me. So imagine this. So I'm attending the convention. I pay my $10, and I walk in, and I see a whole bunch of people I know. And it was a preparedness convention. It wasn't mine. It was another one. And I'm talking to the vendors and having a great time. And I happened to be talking to a guy who was running for a U.S. Congress seat. And the cops showed up. There were three of them in front of me and one of them behind me. And one of them had his left hand on his gun belt and his right hand ready to shoot me, ready to grab his pistol and shoot me. So I said, hey guys, what's up? And one of them said, are you Vincent Finelli? And I said, yeah, what's up? Step outside. I said, wow, did I do something wrong? Please step outside. Did you see me do something wrong? Step outside. Or what? Or you're going to jail. So I'll tell you what. Okay. I'll step outside. Oh, I can get my $10 back. So one guy ready to shoot me from behind in case the first three in front of me miss. Okay. And I tell him, I got to get my $10 back. And they waited. They literally...
they waited for... Okay, that's good.
Mm. Yeah, and I was with another guy. He happened to be a dentist. And, you know, the two of us are dressed kind of... we didn't look like thugs. And so he said, wait a minute. I got to get my $10 back, too, because I drove you here. So okay. Both got our $10 back. And then I said, wait a minute. Hold it. Would you take a picture of this? And I handed him my phone at the time. And we have a picture of these cops escorting me out. So, you know, even though the cops have just threatened to put me in jail for something that they couldn't describe to me what the reason was, and I still don't know, other than somebody called the cops on me and said, hey, Finelli's here, call the cops. That's the only thing I can think of. But even then, I'm delaying, I'm confused, I don't understand, I need a better explanation. Even then. So even when the cops, even when there's four of them, you can still do this. Now, there is a risk. You might get shot. But, you know, I am just not willing to be treated as a criminal. Just because, and that's another thing. You see, anybody can call the cops on anybody. And those blue flag will show up.
Yep.
They'll show up. I mean, all somebody has to say is, I think he's got a gun. And those guys come running. They're looking for a gunfight. They're looking for a human target. I mean, the news is full of people being shot and tased and handcuffed and thrown to the ground. Because someone said, called 911 and said, I think he's got a gun. I think he's got a gun. There's a guy who's sitting on a... He went to visit his friend in California. I believe Hayward, California. So he goes to visit his friend. He's a little inebriated, and he rings the doorbell, and his friend's not there. So he sits on his front porch, and he's got the garden hose in his hand, sitting on the front porch. Guy across the street calls 911 and says, I think there's a guy with a gun across the street. What kind of gun? Well, I think it's a small pistol or something like that. That's what he said. Small pistol. So the cops show up. They draw their weapons on this guy sitting on the front porch with the garden hose. And they say, drop your weapon. He looks at him. So they shoot him. They shoot this guy with the garden hose.
No, this is a true story, right?
True story. Absolutely okay. True story. There's plenty of stories like that. One of the guys who's on the air with me, his name is Steve Angle, A-N-G-L-E, in Hays City, Kansas. It's a little after midnight. Doorbell rings. He looks out the door. He's got, you know, he's expecting, this is not good. It's late at night. And so he's got his .45 in his hand. He looks out the window, and it's the cops. So he transfers his .45 to his left hand, holds it by the muzzle, opens the door with the right hand. Cops see the gun. Put a pistol in his face, tell him to drop the gun. He stands there, so they beat him up right in his own doorway. And they say, we got a 911 call. He goes, no one here called 911. No one called 911. It's just me watching TV. Everybody else is asleep. So that's what they do. They say, 911, we have to respond. So they respond and beat him up in his own house. Then he spends the next he goes to the hospital because they really beat him up. Threw him down, and he spent the next 3 days in jail. Now he's facing an assault on two police officers with a deadly weapon. They came to his house. He opened the door. That's what he did wrong. He opened the door.
There's a number of lessons to be learned by that, and I'll just say this, Vince. I have at my home every square inch of my property video 24/7. But having said that, I mean, that wouldn't have stopped a police officer from beaten the, you know, tar out of me or obviously that gentleman there. So you're not even safe in your own home. Now, okay, you would not have opened the door. I mean, what's the lesson from that, aside from don't open the door, or is that the lesson?
Well, if you open the door, what good can come from opening the door? Can it get any better? I don't think so.
Hmm.
I think True. It's better if they stay outside.
True.
Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, my son, my wife was visiting one of our children out of state, and my son was with me, and it was about 11:30 at night, and he ran upstairs and said, "Dad, the cops are here." I said, "Oh man, you know, I wasn't looking forward to a shootout that night. I really wasn't." And you know, for those who listen to me, they know I'm armed all the time. And I'm, you know, I'm armed in the studio. I'm armed when I travel. And so I thought, man, what's going on? So we looked in this. We have a driveway that's a third of a mile long. We live in the middle of nowhere, literally. I mean, I'm not exaggerating. And so this cop car comes in, does a cruise around our house, goes in the back behind our house, does a K turn, and very slowly goes out. I called the dispatcher, and I said, "Did you guys send a patrol car over here?" Nope. "Do you know where your deputies are?" "No, they're anywhere in the county." So they don't call in and tell you that they're going to the Finelli's house? Nope. They do their own thing. So really, what's your last name, Linda? I'm not going to give you my last name. Really?
Here we go.
"And I'm paying your salary, Linda." Okay. So I called. I thanked her, and I called all the surrounding counties, and I wanted to know why the cops and who they were and why they were at my house. And no one, they all said, "No, it wasn't us." So when I talked to the state police, I said, "Would you call our county and find out what was going on and if they came? And would you call me back, please?" So the dispatcher from the state police said, "Look, we have a screen. I know where all our cars are. They're on GPS. I can see them all. Nobody was at your house." Okay. So she called our county, the dispatcher, and then she called me back. The state police dispatcher called me back and said, "Yeah, it was your county. I talked to the dispatcher." Okay, thanks. So I called Linda back and I said, "Linda, you lied to me. You breached the public trust, and I'm going to do everything I can to get you fired." So I was on the air on Monday morning. That was a Friday. On Monday morning, during a bottom of the hour, you don't have any breaks here, but
sorry about
I
that.
I got a lot of work done during the breaks. I called the sheriff's office, and the sheriff came on and said, "Vincent, you know, there are people who really want us to patrol their property." I said, not me. "Do not come on my property. Do not trespass. Do not come on my property." So I told the sheriff no. So what I'm saying is you can say no to all kinds of people.
Sure you can. But we've been conditioned not to. We, you know, and some might say, "Well, you know, we respect authority." Well, wait a minute. You know, I'll let you respond to that.
You have to earn respect. Respect is earned in my book. And just because someone's a politician, for example, doesn't mean I respect them. I mean, I probably start out not respecting them, and, well, I do. But I don't automatically respect someone. They have to earn it somehow, either by reputation or by recommendation or, you know, firsthand experience or something like that.
It's a different world that we live in now, especially. I mean, it really is. I mean,
one of the things that we say on the air is that we don't take direction very well. And we don't.
I can see that.
You know, I consider some laws just, you know, recommendations. For example, I would think nothing of getting on a four-wheeler or a dirt bike and riding down the road in front of our farm to check the cows. I just hop on, you know, jump on the Kickstarter, start it up, and go down the road. Now, in some places, that would be quite frowned upon. I walk around with a gun on my hip, a 45. I was I walked into
open carry, right? Open carry.
Well, yeah, I have a concealed carry permit, which I don't need, but yeah, open carry. And I don't even have a holster. I just take the .45 and stuff it between my shirt and my inside of my pants.
Okay.
And, the butt hangs out. It fits better that way than a holster. So I just wear it like that. I'm on the tractor with it. I walk around town. I go shopping with it. I go into the Chinese factory outlet with it. And very rarely do I have anybody say, "What are you doing with a gun?" Very rarely. And when I do encounter, it's only happened 3 times. I'll explain that it's my duty, not my right. It's my duty. It's my duty to protect me as the head of the household. It's my duty to protect my wife and family. And if I'm in a situation in a store, for example, and something bad happens, I think it's my duty to stop that as well. Now, why is it that we think that the police can carry guns and we can't? Why is that? We have given them the authority to do that. We have given it to them. So I think that here's a bill that I suggested to the Missouri government, that we, the villagers, shall have the right to have any weapon that the government has. Just one sentence. And I was challenged by that. One of the guys who reviews the constitutionality of the language of bills said, "Well, first of all, it's too short. It'll never pass." Okay. He said, "So you want a bazooka?" And I said, "Well, I don't know if I want one, but if I do want one, I want the right to have one." And he said, "And a drone?" And I said, "Well, yeah." "And a tank?" "Yeah, yeah. If you guys have them, why can't I? Why shouldn't I be able to have one?" And he was shocked by that. And then there's another bill that I
Vince, obviously they have no clue what the Second Amendment stands for then. I mean,
right. I mean, your news
or what it's for.
Arguing about, today's weaponry, it was not intended in the Constitution that the citizen should have access to weaponry that military does.
Right. I mean, they want us to have muskets and, right. muzzles or whatever, while they have, the automatic weapons, but again, the Second Amendment, what is it? What's it for? It's not for hunting or fishing or not fishing or whatever. That's the way I'd fish. But anyway, I don't have the patience to fish, so I just shoot the things. Anyway, the understanding there is, so we are able to fight tyranny. Go ahead, sir. So continue.
Well, another bill that I propose become law is that, no government employee shall be immune from prosecution.
Oh.
Simple as that. Another one is, they talk about campaign finance limitations. Another one there, and that is, the maximum contribution to any political candidate shall be $5. And and a woman who is...
Let's pass that one real quick.
Well, a woman who is presenting a bill said... $2,600. And I said, "No, $5. She said, and I said, "By the way, why is your petition 8 pages long?" She said, "Well, it eliminates loopholes." And I said, "Show me where the loophole is with a maximum campaign contribution to a candidate of $5. Where is a loophole?" "There isn't a loophole." She said, "Yeah, but they can't do much with $5. And I said, "Precisely. That's the point. They can't do much with $5. So the prices for the rest of us when we want to buy radio advertising or television advertising won't be $950 for 30 seconds in a local market. It'll be affordable." Because during election season, what happens is, like, I used to buy ads for the Get Prepared Expo on television, big television station in Springfield, Missouri. It was $950 for 30 seconds. They said, "Okay, now if you pay 90 days in advance, we'll hold it for you. But because this is election season, if a candidate wants to bump you and they're willing to pay more, then they get it, unless you're willing to pay more." I said, "What?" So I lock in for these commercials, and these politicians can bump me because they're willing to pay more than we've agreed right now that I should pay? And the answer is, yeah. It's outrageous.
Wow. Whatever happened to contractual, you know,
right.
contract law, I guess, but you have people say, well, Vince, that's capitalism because, you know.
It's greed.
Yeah. Yeah. We expect nothing less from those in office, but
so simplistic in the common sense factor. It's just,
yeah.
And see those responses. It's amazing.
I do like the simplistic nature. I mean, you know, one sentence, my goodness, when we understand that some of the best, you know, speeches and addresses have been 200-300 words long, you know, compared to the legislation we see now, or the speeches we see now. It's just
like the Ten Commandments. You know, they say that the Constitution was based on, you know, God, the rights bestowed on us by God. Yet the Ten Commandments, very short. They could not do that. You know, they have to make these 100-page bills, 1,000-page bills.
Yeah, I mean
we can seriously. We can pass them to read what's in the bill.
Well, yeah, if they allow us to read it. It's, but seriously, if the government was going to write the Ten Commandments, it would be, you know, it would be probably 1,000 pages long. Vince, we're about 9 minutes before the top of the hour. I got to ask you a question because,
sure.
Folks, you got to hear this. You got to hear this. We are talking off air, I think, about, I don't want to give away the punchline, so to speak, but we were talking about cash money and counterfeit. You remember that story that you were sharing with me about?
Yeah, yeah. My son wanted a toaster oven. And so I got on the internet, and this is one of those countertop things. I'm looking for a toaster oven. I'm looking at the hinges on the door. You know, the front door, it's glass, and they're all cheesy. Every single one. I don't care what the label said. They're all made in China, and they're really flimsy and cheesy. And I'm thinking, boy, this is just a great way to start the counter on fire with these cheesy pieces of Chinese appliances, if you will. So I couldn't find one, and I got this credit card in the mail from JCPenney. And in it said, if you use this card, we will give you 50% off selected small appliances. So I looked on the internet, and they had one for $100, and with that 50% off, it was $50, and that's about what it should cost at the most. So Mrs. Finelli and I went into JCPenney, or JCPenney, and it was Christmas time, and we're looking around, and so I find this stack of toaster ovens, and I said to the woman behind the counter, I said, I'd like to buy this. Would that be okay? And she said, sure. So I'd like to look and see if there's anything else first, and I'll be back. And she said, okay. So I walked around the store. There was nothing that I was interested in. So I waited in line, and the line was pretty long. There were two cashiers side by side, you know, taking these transactions through completion. And so I gave her my card, or I swiped my card, and everything's good. And then she says, ID. I said, wow, you need to have an ID to buy toaster ovens now? I mean, the same story over and over. That's everywhere I go, or at least at that time. And she said, well, yeah. So you don't think it's me? No, I think it's you. And went through that whole thing. Now, the line's getting longer because it's... I'm not saying things as fast as I probably could, and I'm confused with each sentence. And so people are starting to fork the line. So now the line is kind of split, and people are trying to figure out what the holdup is. Well, it's me and Mrs. Finelli, and Mrs. Finelli's kind of watching. And I said, I'll tell you what. I can't do it. I can't give you an ID for this. Can you reverse the transaction? So she reverses the transaction. And I said, you know what? I really need this darn thing. Tell you what. If I have a $100 bill in my wallet, will you accept that? And she said, well, sure. You know, as long as it's not counterfeit. And I'm going to have to check it. And I said, well, okay. Okay, you can do that. Now, this woman is about my age. You know, she's like 60-something. And I said, okay. And if it's counterfeit, I'm going to call a manager. And I said, well, that's fine. You can do that. But if you think it's counterfeit, you can't keep it. It's mine. And if you try to keep it, I'm going to jump over this counter and take it back. She looked at me like, what? because she wouldn't accept it for the transaction. She would just want to keep it. Well, it's mine. Just because she thinks it's counterfeit doesn't mean it is counterfeit. That's her opinion, right? So I'm not going to give her a $100 bill, let her keep it and tell me it's counterfeit, and then, you know, have no transaction with that. So she said, I'm going to test this and see if it's real. And I said, well, that's good. That's good. I think it is. And so she takes out this pen and she marks through the $100 bill and she says, it's real. That's what I thought it was. So she proceeds with the transaction and she starts handing me the change. And I said, hold it. How do I know that's real? And she said, you don't think that's real? And I said, well, I don't know where you got that. And I don't want to be in possession of counterfeit currency. It's illegal. So she said, you want me to check it? I said, absolutely. Absolutely. So she checks the first 20, holds it up. You know. Now, the line's really long now because this is taking quite a while, and I'm very slow at understanding. And then she checks the second one. She said, you want me to check the ones too? I said, well, yeah, because I don't know where you got those. So you know what? The lesson was that just because they hand you back currency doesn't mean they're not handing you back counterfeit currency, because we don't know where they got it. So we assume that they're right, and they assume we're wrong, right? Isn't that the way it goes?
Yeah, that's right.
And there's another story. There's another story that relates to that very quickly. I bought some brake shoes. I was out of state, and I was going to help someone change their brake.
Did your Nikes wear out or what?
No, for an automobile.
Yeah, I know. And
so I bought them, and I said, you know, if I don't need them, can I bring them back tomorrow? The guy said, sure. So they typed in my phone number, and I was out of state, 1,000 miles away, and my account came up as in Missouri with that same chain store, and everything was good. And I didn't use them, and I brought them back the next day unopened, didn't even open the box. And I said, I thought I might need these, but I didn't. May I return them? Sure. The guy opens the box and looks at every single component. And I said, is it all there? He said, yep, it's all here. And I said, well, great. I kind of thought it would be. And he said, I said, so do you guys have problems with people returning things that, you know? He said, you wouldn't believe it. People will put used parts back in the new box and return them and say they never used them. I said, wow, it's unbelievable. And here's the lesson there. So I'm thinking that I'm getting a box of brand new parts, right? That may not be the case. Now, what would have happened if they were used brakes in there? I didn't open them, brought them back the next day and said, you know what? I don't need these. And the guy opens the box and says, hey, these are used. Wow. Well, I didn't do that. Would he believe me? I don't think so. So what we need to do, it's incumbent upon us to check to make sure that we are getting what we pay for at the transaction point. Okay? We need to look inside the box and make sure it's all there. Because I don't think they're going to believe us if we return something and we say it's not all there. They'll say, well, you took that part out. No, I didn't. Well, it's not there, so we can't give you a refund because it's not complete.
There's a lot to be said about that, yeah. A lot of lessons here. And you know, Vince, and I want folks to think about everything you said here, because
common sense principles.
But multiple angles. Look at it from multiple angles and think about what Vince said, because, you know, again, the takeaway here, at least in my view, folks, you know, this is not being a smartass. This is, and pardon my language, this is not being anything more than having the power to say no, you know, fighting back and saying, look, you know, well, I think you said it best, Vince, you know, earlier. I think you said it best when we have the power. We do. We've got the power.
Folks, we're at the top of the hour. We're going to be right back with Vince Vannelli, staying with us through hour three. What a wonderful...
In hour three, by the way, his concerns about, well, what he's concerned about in teaching preparedness at home, and he's got some really interesting, well, Max's Law. We're going to learn about that, and Mini Max Regret. Stay with us.
This is the Global Star Radio Network.